It is 2:06 on Monday afternoon. This is Political Rewind, coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Jim Galloway, the political writer for the AJC, is here. You read his column on Thursdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree edition of the paper. And as we always tell you, he presides over the Political Insider blog that's on the AJC website. We're also joined by Theron Johnson, Democratic strategist. It's always a pleasure to have him and his colleague in crime, Brian Robinson, a Republican insider. These two have developed a long relationship of antagonizing one another, and we always enjoy getting them on the show to do that while they're here. Thank you both for being here. Before we start, this is another busy, busy day, breaking news. Within the last few minutes, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that sanctuary cities, so-called sanctuary cities, those that will not comply with federal requirements in terms of turning undocumented workers, undocumented residents over to ICE, will not receive Justice Department grants if they don't comply with the federal law. That's in keeping with something Donald Trump, President Trump, has said for a while he wanted to do. So now the AG says that he will support that. The House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, really strange news coming out of his office today. His spokesman, his communications director, has confirmed that Nunes met a source on White House grounds last week, one day before he alleged in news conferences that President Trump and his team were subjected to surveillance during the final months of the Obama administration. He met at the White House on White House grounds, according to his spokesman, because he wanted to go to a secure location to look at this information, which he says may very well confirm Donald Trump is correct when he says he was wiretapped by the Obama administration. The fact of the matter is there is a secure location on Capitol Hill where he could be doing this, could have done the same thing. And one real quick thing, Jim, and I'll give you a chance. The Senate Democrats on the Judiciary Committee have forced a one-week delay in a vote in committee on Judge Neil Gorsuch. So they're going to try to milk that for all it's worth, see if they can drum up more opposition. Jim?
Do you realize how strange this Nunes thing is?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so you go to the White House grounds to accept a leak that's presumably from the White House. Then you go back to the Capitol and you announce it to the press corps, and then you go back to the White House to tell Donald Trump about the leak that you got at the White House.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the Brian, Theron, jump in. This is one of the strangest episodes I can ever recall watching unfold. Because you're right, Jim. He apparently got this information on the White House grounds. He says he wasn't in the White House, which probably means he was the OEB, the old executive office building. But this is a strange story.
I mean, it proves to us what we knew once Donald Trump became President Trump, which is that he and a lot of his allies and folks around him are just walking conflicts of interest. And so what you've seen is since he's been inaugurated, it's just been, you know, scandal after scandal and investigation after investigation. And now you have these reports that, to Jim's point, is just so confusing and just so it's just baffling what's coming out. So I'm not surprised, but I just think it's very disappointing that this is the type of things that are going on.
Brian, it also seems to be going an awfully, by the way, Sean Spicer is holding his press brief right now. He just said the White House is not concerned about this report about Nunes. Brian, you know, this seems to be one of those situations where you're going an awfully long way to try to let President Trump exonerate him from this tweet 3 weeks ago that he'd been wiretapped by President Obama. Why not just let it drop, for goodness sake?
Absolutely. You know, I wonder how many times over the last 3 or 4 weeks Sean Spicer has said, I'm not talking about this anymore, but let me say this, you know, and it keeps coming back to it. Let's move on. Now, one thing that is going in the Republicans' favor here is exactly what Theron said. It's confusing, and it's really kind of hard to keep up with. You know, you see all the smoke, but no one really sees the fire. And so after a while, people begin to tune out because it's sort of hard to follow the breaking bits of this story as they come out. As far as what happened and what didn't. Now, as far as the integrity of the investigation, I don't think that this calls that into question. The fact that this came out at all shows that there are other people at the table. There are other sources here. So there's going to be Republicans on the Hill who take this seriously and who want to get to the bottom of it. I think getting to the bottom of it is good for the Trump administration because it allows us to move on and get back to talking about passing his agenda.
It seems clear, Jim, especially over the weekend, listening to some members, the Senate Intelligence Committee is taking this very, very seriously. There is concern now, given Nunes's activity on the House side, that that investigation may not develop in the way that people would like. But the Senate's taking it very seriously.
Oh, yeah. They are now going to interview President Trump's son-in-law.
Yeah,
Jared Kushner.
Yeah, that was go ahead.
And on the same day that they announced that he was going to be kind of heading up a White House SWAT type of business initiative.
Yeah, it turns out that we do know the White House did because they knew that a story was about to break a while back about the last month that Kushner had one meeting. With, I guess, the Russian ambassador, as I recall. Now it turns out there were a series of meetings, and that's why the Senate Intelligence Committee.
And one of them was with a trading bank of some sort.
Yes. So we'll see how that thing develops. We got a lot to talk about today. We're going to go back and look at health care. Boy, Friday, Jim, that was a whirlwind day. That whole thing was playing out while we were on the air, and so we never got a chance to catch our breath. So today, as the show goes on, we'll kind of reassess what happened on Friday.
Right. My wife asked me if we should have shifted our 401k to bonds, and of course I didn't.
By the way, tweet us at PoliticsGPB so you can be part of the conversation. We're down to the last few days of the legislative session. Let's start there if we can, Jim. What's happening with campus carry? Is it going to
get through? Well, first of all, what we've got right now happening as we're gathering is we've got the House Rules Committee meeting setting its agenda for that chamber for the penultimate day, which is tomorrow, and you've got the Senate Rules Committee doing the same thing for that chamber, which means they're setting the calendar. They're going to determine what these final arguments are going to be, and yeah, it will determine whether campus carry comes up in the Senate and is something for something that will be kind of agreed or not agreed upon on the final day, which is going to be Thursday. You've got casino gaming still making somebody's detected a couple heart palpitations there. We don't know if that's still alive. You've got fantasy sports contests going, still trying to make its way to a Senate floor vote. So you've got quite a few things. Nothing absolutely major that actually. If these guys get angry at each other and want to shut down the Capitol early, they can do it.
Yeah, they've already passed the budget.
Yeah, I think one thing to watch would be HB 159, which is the adoption bill, or at least the contents of it, because you've got Governor Nathan Deal and House Speaker David Ralston kind of ramping up the emotion on this bill, which has been stopped by an amendment that would give legal protection to child placement agencies that don't want to work with, say, gay couples and such.
What are you two watching?
Well, he had a lot of the highlights, and of course on the fantasy sports tomorrow, they're bringing in DJ Shockley, the former UGA quarterback, and last week they had Tom Glavine coming.
What's
in.
What's that all about, Brian?
Well, Jim's writing about this a lot, and it comes down to, do the daily fantasy sports, FanDuel and DraftKings, do they amount to gambling, or is it a game of skill? And the argument is it's a game of skill. There are millions, 1.5 million Georgians who are playing these games, and so that's what it comes down to. And Jim's going to argue that that's not the case. The Constitution.
No. Look. All I'm saying is that right now, under current statute, under the state constitution, that is gambling. And what's going to happen is if this bill gets its way, what is it? 118? HB 118?
No, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Brian doesn't have a client in that.
The legislature is simply attempting to redefine this game without any change of the rules or anything as non-gambling, not gambling. It is ungambling.
You know what I find.
So go ahead.
What I find convincing on it though is that it's already here. So it's not an expansion. Like people are already playing the games. This just sort of captures tax revenue and regulates it. So, I mean, good luck trying to outlaw it. It's on the internet.
Theron, do you have a dog in this fight?
I do not.
Are you a fantasy sports guy?
I used to play a lot of fantasy sports, but you know, now I'm just a poor lobbyist.
You're playing real golf.
Trying to make a, I don't wear an Italian suit and an alligator loafers, you know. I think this was a very smart move by, I think, the author of this bill, Trey Kelly. I mean, to bring Tom Glavine down there. To bring someone who's revered. I mean, he's a legend, you know, Atlanta Braves pitcher here. And it really, to me, brought a level of humanization to the bill. I mean, what Tom Glavine basically said is, listen, I am avid. Like, I'm a person who participates in fantasy sports all the time, and really tried to make the argument that it was a game of skill. But to Jim's point, I mean, listen, it's gambling. I mean, if it was just a game of skill, why do we need to have betting and money and all that? So I think there's just a robust debate going on.
But
right,
I will tell you what, if this bill passes, I think you're going to have people who want to legalize online poker or horse racing. Really kind of get some encouragement.
So
But horse racing is, by definition, parimutuel gambling, and that is specifically, in my understanding, outlawed by the Constitution.
Okay, let's do the adoption bill for a minute, because that's been a fascinating story. You know, Theron, clearly the Religious Liberty Bill didn't get anywhere this session, and so here we have this bill which is supposed to bring up to date, modernize our adoption procedures in the state of Georgia. And the conservatives who normally would have backed religious liberty try to take a little piece of that into the adoption bill by, as Jim said, providing a statute which would protect adoption agencies or child care agencies from dealing with gay families. Yeah.
This is just a discriminatory amendment. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And at a time where I think our state is trying to move forward, we're trying to be a non-discriminatory state. You know, we promote all these businesses that want to come here and do business, and we want to be the state that's very inclusionary. This amendment just showed you that, you know, we got people down at the state legislature that just want to take us backwards. Now, what's at stake here is that this amendment could possibly, or the way it was introduced, if they don't take it out, which I think the governor and the speaker is working hard to take out, but it could possibly derail the good intentions of trying to really improve our adoption laws, which haven't been improved in this state in over 20 years.
27.
And, yeah, to be 27 to be exact. So what was so disheartening to me, and I talked about this earlier with Brian, and Brian has had to hear me say this, but it was just very unfortunate for those many, many children who right now, I mean, thousands and thousands of children in this state who want a home, who need good parents, who are waiting to make sure that they can have a people who love them and move them out of these adoption facilities. And to have this senator come and introduce something that I just think is just so discriminatory, people should be outraged by this.
And of course, that's one of the issues here is there are far more children available to be placed, who need to be placed, and you're cutting off the potential for a lot of them to find homes.
Right, yeah. You've got a lot of kids aging out in the system, in state warehouses, if you will.
And what we know there is that if you end your 18th birthday and you're still in the state system, your chances of going to college and much less finishing college are pretty close to zero. Startling is a very hard word to say, close to zero. And that's distressing. But we know when we get these kids into families that are caring, that have financial means, their chances go up dramatically. And that's so important. And this is also coming out on the day that we see North Carolina is expected to lose close to $4 billion over the next decade in lost events and lost business. Those are huge, huge numbers. $4 billion is a sixth of our entire state budget.
But let's be fair here real quick, Bill. This was aimed at LGBTQ couples. I mean, I don't want to miss this point. I don't want to get into talking about businesses and all this other stuff, which is important. I mean, get me wrong, but to in 2017 to just be so intentional and blatant with your discriminatory amendment targeting these people who love each other, who want to come together, whether it's man to man or woman to woman, to adopt a child and to try to change this child's life and have a family. That to me is what's so sickening.
Let me kind of suggest that there might be. I may get a little conspiratorial here, but there may be other targets here. Also, by putting that language into 159, you're sending a signal to Governor Nathan Deal, who vetoed the religious liberty bill last year. And of course, Deal was the guy who wrote the last iteration of the state adoption law in 1990 as a Democratic senator. So there's that little tidbit right there. But also, I'm interested in just this vociferous reaction that's come out of the governor and out of the House Speaker.
Yeah, the governor has said, I don't want this. Right. Get this out of here.
Directed at the Senate and possibly maybe Casey Cagle. Now, Casey Cagle, we know, is running for governor. David Ralston, we think, maybe runs for governor. This wouldn't be the worst issue to run on if you're David Ralston.
Interesting. All right. Speaking of moving backward, to pick up on Theron Johnson, whether for good or ill, are we going to get what's happening with this effort to restore Confederate Memorial Day as an official holiday? The background on that, of course, is that last year, very quietly, when the state holiday calendar was released, the date that had previously been officially known as Confederate Memorial Day now suddenly was state holiday.
Yeah, and that had to have been 2 years ago.
Was it? All right,
Because I took the questions in the governor's office. Okay. I was still in the governor's office at the time, so that's why I know the timeline. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. It has become kind of a holiday for to be named later, if you will.
I just think this is just so bizarre. You know, and this is what, you know, Brian, he won't ever really admit that he voted for Donald Trump, but I know deep down inside he probably didn't. But a lot of my conservative friends, I mean, the ultra-conservatives, the card-carrying Republican conservatives in Georgia, you know, they'll say to me, Theron, Donald Trump is president, so get over it. Well, my message to these conservatives is that the union won, so get over it.
Well, I will tell you, Tommy Benton of Jefferson, I think.
Yes.
He's the author of this resolution. He had a press conference today, and he was the only state lawmaker there. If that gives you any comfort there, I think he had a couple of Sons of Confederate Veterans organizers with him.
Yeah, this is not going to pass.
No, let me look.
I'm asking. I'm not telling.
No.
I mean, okay. But the fact that you got to ask, Bill, that shows you how backwards we're going in the state.
That's just so unfair. I mean, we all have our crosses to bear, and Representative Benton is one of our crosses to bear. You know, he said a lot of unfortunate things, and you can see the fact there's no one standing with him, that this has no widespread support. The fact is, if you want to celebrate the Confederacy on that day, no one is stopping you.
All right. We are going to take a quick break because we got a lot more to talk about on the show today. It's 2:24. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Do you have kids? Chances are good that you've embarrassed them. Those new dance moves you were practicing when their friends came over, driving them to school in that old car. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and I don't want you to give up your groove, but might I suggest donating that old car to this station? You'll save your kids some embarrassment, and if you upgrade to a newer model, you could be the coolest parents ever. Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Theron Johnson, Brian Robinson, and Jim Galloway joining me today. I do think we need to look back at the what happened on Friday with the Affordable Care Act and the attempt to overturn it. But move it forward in terms of some Georgians that are very involved in this and have been reacting to it. But I really have to start with a commercial that on Friday night during the NCAA tournament, a conservative PAC produced some spots that they bought time on NCAA games in, I think, about five different media markets, Iowa, California, part of California, targeted at conservative districts. And after the bill was pulled, people who were watching the tournaments in those towns saw this commercial.
Republicans are keeping their promise with a new plan for better health care. more choices and lower costs, putting doctors and patients in charge again. No more big government penalties or job-killing mandates. New tax credits to make insurance cheaper. And real protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Thank Congressman David Valadao for keeping his promise and replacing the Affordable Care Act with the better health care you deserve.
And, of course, in each of those media markets, they plugged in the specific congressman. You know, Theron, when I heard about that spot, when I actually listened to it, I had kind of mixed reactions. On one hand, I thought, how embarrassing that whoever was responsible for this media buy didn't think to pull it off the air. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, we're living in the world of alternative reality. Maybe this is the first effort in the campaign to convince people the Republicans got what they wanted.
I mean, it goes back to what Brian said. It's oh, you know, smoke over here, but no one can really, you know, find a true fire. I mean, look, what happened on Friday was a total failure. By the Republican Party, who they have the White House, they have the House, they have the Senate. They had no excuse. And Brian and we've talked about this, is that you put forth a bill that, quite frankly, the problems of the bill, which would have taken 24 million Americans, well, taking health care away from 24 million Americans by 2026, would have clearly penalized the elderly and the poor. I mean, didn't have anything really in there about, you know, how this was a better plan to improve, which I will say on the air, Obamacare, which is imperfect. And so Donald Trump and really Steve Bannon, let's not leave this guy off the hook, you know, made a threat to Republicans because on Thursday the bill didn't come up and basically threatened them and say, hey, we want to vote on this on Friday, knowing that Speaker Ryan was unable to deliver the Freedom Caucus. And so now what we hear from Donald Trump is, oh, I may want to start meeting with Democrats. Well, newsflash to the president, that's what you do when you go and you assume office and you try to govern and you try to reach across the aisle. But let me tell you, Republicans are in a very, very tough place to expend as much political capital as they did to have that fail. I just think that's a really bad start for the president.
Yeah, Brian, the president spoke after we went off the air on Friday, so obviously we didn't get a chance to address it. He was remarkably calm and even-handed. It was a very different kind of Donald Trump that we saw. He tried to blame it on the Democrats. Is that really going to fly anywhere? I mean, except for the most hardcore Trump supporters.
You know, I don't think it's flying with him. I mean, he changed the message yesterday saying Club for Growth, Heritage, the Freedom Caucus. He went directly at the far right of the party himself and had his staff go out on the Sunday morning shows and back up that message that these people weren't team players and are driving the message now that the Freedom Caucus saved Obamacare and we're going to move on. And, you know, I don't know how effective that is. I think where he can carry a big stick is by threatening to make a deal with Democrats. That could scare the Freedom Caucus into coming to the table, still being able to claim victory and getting a more conservative version of this, perhaps. But I don't – the problem with that, it sounds great in theory. It sounds great in a vacuum. The problem is the Democrats have completely locked down. They see their political forces at work saying, do not cooperate with Trump in any way. Schumer has basically said, we're not going to do anything. We're going to fight him on everything. We're going to – even someone – perfectly qualified, like Neil Gorsuch. We're going to obstruct.
But the problem here is, if you're going to invite Democrats to the table, you've got to create something like at least a semi-friendly environment for them.
Well,
and beginning with the inauguration, that did not happen. Okay. That has not happened.
So all right. So let's. But taking you first, Brian. If in fact Democrats do what you're suggesting, and they do seem to be headed that direction, then they are doing exactly what they spent 8 years condemning Republicans for doing, which is being an obstructionist party. Not surprising. This is why people are so sick and tired, fed up with Washington in general. But Jim, to that point. And without belaboring it for now, it does seem to me, and Theron, I really want to get you on in this too, that it does seem to me that President Trump does have an opening to Democrats if if he starts looking at an infrastructure bill. Democrats would love to be involved, as long as it's a bill that actually uses government funds, not just a sweetheart kind of deal that gets his contractors. Yeah, right?
Well, let's go back. I mean, let's give President Trump some credit. I want to be fair. He did meet with the Congressional Black Caucus. From the reports from that meeting, it was a civil meeting. They agreed on some things. And so I think what you're seeing now is that he's got to go beyond that, to Jim's point. You got to make people feel welcome. Now, I want to push back on this thing that we remember back in 2009, then President Obama did make an attempt to reach out to Republicans. I mean, he invited them to the White House. They bowled. I don't know if they play basketball. I don't know many Republicans in Washington can actually, you know, maybe dunk or have any hooping skills.
That's racist.
Oh my God, no,
that's not racist. That's factual. You look at who's going to the Final Four.
All right, let's move on.
But my point is this: is that he has an opening here, as your point, Bill, to really figure out how he can come together with Democrats to create jobs, build on our infrastructure. And it's got to be very genuine, and he's got to be authentic in his outreach.
I just want one more point before we leave on health care. You know, I mean, Paul Ryan has come in for a whole lot of criticism, but I will tell you what, he may have saved his majority by pulling that bill, because they went because the White House and Ryan went so far to the right. When you start suggesting that health insurance essentials don't include ER trips, when they don't include maternity coverage, mental health coverage, then you start hitting people really, really where they live.
Well, I think
and by preventing a vote on that. I mean, can you imagine the TV ads that would have resulted?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sure. But here's the flip side of that, is if you leave all those mandates in, as popular as they are, every one of these mandates that Americans love so much, whether it's those conditions that Jim mentioned or if it's making sure that you can get coverage if you have a pre-existing condition, those are the most expensive things. That is why our health care costs are exploding. What Republicans are trying to do by going after those mandates is to bend the cost curve down so that families that can just afford catastrophic coverage, so they don't lose everything if they get sick, can get that coverage. To have everything, which is what the Democrats want to give you, to have everything is unsustainable and it is unaffordable, and we have proven it.
But you're still pushing all those costs on hospital emergency rooms across the country.
All right, let's talk about this in terms of Georgia. Jim, you picked up a story that Real Clear Politics ran on, I choose to call it, poor Tom Price. Gives up a safe seat in Congress, gives up a possible bid. Well, I guess he could still run for governor if things don't get better.
he may come back sooner than we think.
But here he is. I mean, this is a guy set to be the hero delivering this new health care package and the whole thing. Just watching him stand next to Trump on Friday with the vice president on one side, Tom Price on the other, it was a sad moment.
And it was kind of like, America, here's the guy in charge of Obamacare now. because he truly is. And what's going to happen now is we're all going to be watching Tom Price to see what little incremental changes he can make to the Affordable Care
Act.
Well,
but there's a question, Theron. One of the things that I think we all have to wonder, tell you what, let's play this Donald Trump soundbite to lead into what I'd like to ask you, Theron.
I'll tell you what's going to come out of it is a better bill. I really believe a better bill. Because there were things in this bill I didn't particularly like. And I think it's a better bill. You know, both parties can get together and do real health care. That's the best thing. Obamacare was rammed down everyone's throat. 100% Democrat. And I think having bipartisan would be a big, big improvement.
Okay, so we can argue about whether Obamacare really was rammed down everyone. The Democrats did it. But here's the more, I think, relevant question to today and tomorrow. What do we think the administration and Tom Price at HHS are going to do, given that Obamacare is the law of the land? Will they try to subvert it? Will they work to crash it? Or will they, in fact, recognize that they've got to do what they can to get Americans to pay, sign up?
Well, if you listen to what President Trump also said, he also said on Friday that Now, Democrats, you own Obamacare.
Which is silly because he's the one who lost a measure to change it. He owns it, like it or not, right?
Yeah. And so to your point and to Jim's point, the guy who really owns Obamacare now is Secretary Price.
Yeah.
And so the Republicans now have clearly got two pathways. One, they can just sit there and let it, you know, do whatever it's going to do. They think that it's going to continue to become more and more expensive, and there's probably going to be some things that's going to happen. Or they could really, truly get Democrats to the table and try to work on this. Now, I will tell you this, and Secretary Price is a very smart doctor. And let's not forget, this is the gentleman who led a lot of repeal efforts during the Obama years. We're not successful, but he had a lot of good ideas that Republicans thought were options to repeal. What's going to be very interesting is to watch his posture and watch his rhetoric when he goes out across the country now and have to defend, number one, why they lost as far as trying to introduce a new bill. But more importantly, to your point, Bill, what are you going to do? What are you going to preserve? What are you going to protect in Obamacare? Because the truth of the matter is that we still have now almost 21 million people in this country who have Obamacare, who enjoys it. It may not be perfect. It definitely needs to be improved. But that's the slippery slope here for Democrats.
And Price is really going to be at the center of a very dicey philosophical argument for Republicans. And you saw it. You saw the beginnings of it on the morning talk shows yesterday. And that is, of course, you had the Freedom Caucus say, we want a complete and absolute repeal of Obamacare. But then you had some Republican moderates on TV saying that, look, the one thing Obamacare has done is that it has established a federal role in health care for every American, and that's something we have to respect. Now, in that sense, it'll be interesting to see which way Tom Price goes.
Well, and we're going to we're coming up, I believe, within weeks on the deadline by which insurance companies have to announce what markets they are going to be selling in 2018. Are we going to see more retreat? Or is this at least a temporary stabilization because Obamacare does remain in place? None of us can really answer that question right now, Brian.
Oh, I think we can answer that question.
Okay.
Because they've been in retreat even when President Obama was still in office, and they had that backstop there to prevent any changes in the law. And the economics are driving that, and they're going to continue to pull out because it's not working. They're losing millions of dollars, and they're going to get out, period. As Trump said, it will collapse.
All right, we're going to watch it. The president now has to make a decision. He says go ahead with tax reform. During the press briefing, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, said that they're now shooting for August for a vote on a tax reform plan. But if they think that's going to be easier than doing health care, they've got a lot of rethinking to do on that subject. Before we take a break, here's another odd episode from over the weekend. All of us who follow Trump saw his tweet telling us that we should watch Jeanine Pirro on Fox News on Sunday night. It was an odd tweet. He didn't give any details. He just said, watch her. And here's how Judge Pirro started her broadcast.
Paul Ryan needs to step down as Speaker of the House. You know, Americans elected the one man they believed could do it, a complete outsider, someone beholden to no one but them. And Speaker Ryan, you come in with all your swagger and experience, and you sell him a bill of goods, which ends up a complete and total failure. And you allow our president in his first 100 days to come out of the box like that? Based on what?
I've never listened or watched Jeanine Pirro before. She is a strong cup of coffee.
I'm telling you, I've been on that show. I don't know if Brian has been on there. But let me tell you, I've been on that show twice. And it is a – she loves President Trump. I mean, he appeared on her show, I mean, all during the primary. And then to come back and say, oh, this tweet, you know, asking someone to listen to or tune in to a 9 o'clock show and say it had nothing. He had nothing to do with it.
Oh, it was a coincidence.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
all
it's a coincidence. I mean, this is the type of governing that we're on. But I mean, tell you that show, you should watch it, Bill. I mean, it is. You think you've seen crazy. I mean, you really got to go on that show and just really
see. He's sending a subtle. Brian, you're shaking your head. Why did the president? He must have known she was going to.
I think that might be in disgust. I'm not sure.
I am slobber-knot by the entire thing.
I'm sorry, was that word?
No, I think gobsmacked is what you're looking for. Gobsmacked.
Slobber-knot worked, too, if you can visualize it. I was so floored by this entire thing that for this host to insinuate that Paul Ryan is so powerful and he's so smart that he's able to just squish poor little tiny unpowerful President Trump, and he has no ability to engage, or it's utterly ridiculous. She demeans and belittles the person she's trying to praise and to defend.
Well, okay, but what's the message from President Trump then, if he is advising us all to watch what she's going to say?
I am shocked by it, and then for the administration to send out surrogates to the Sunday shows to say, hey, he didn't know she was going to say that. Why was he tweeting it?
Bill, you ask what that means. I think we are in the beginnings of a weak presidency. That's what it means.
But also,
that's what Pirro seems to think, that he's weak, and it's utterly ridiculous. Look, I'm sorry, Theron. Let me say one thing.
Okay, that was a racist cutoff. It's all right.
If Republicans who are calling for Paul Ryan to step down want to know what the result of that is, it will be a complete and total shutdown of the Trump agenda. Without him, there is a vacuum and there is chaos and there is no one to take his place.
Well,
as the
right.
tweet said this weekend,
except
no
for,
one
ma-
wants
except
to
for
be
maybe Tom Price. He might run for re-election.
Wait. You're right, Brian. You've got to say it, because we all agreed before the show started that our favorite tweet of the weekend was about a next speaker, and it was?
No one wants to be Henry VIII's next wife. Great stuff.
Theron.
No, I was going to say, listen, but you know, this is the thing, right? President Trump said from the inception of this bill that he wasn't comfortable with it. And let's face it. I mean, let's be fair, Brian. Speaker Ryan owned it. I mean, he held it up. When they introduced it, you see that tweet and those pictures going around. He held up this bill, and he owned it. And his failure to deliver the mainstream and Republicans and also the status quo and the Freedom Caucus show that there's tremendous dissension right now amongst the Republican Party.
So it bled into this debate among four of the candidates for Republican candidates for the 6th District congressional seat last night, Jim. One of the candidates, Bob Gray, blamed the defeat on Paul Ryan, so he's clearly running an anti-Ryan campaign for Congress. I think Judson Hill said he didn't like the bill to begin with. He thinks they needed to take it back and do something more comprehensive. Yes?
Right. Now, Bob Gray is, of course, trying to become the Trump candidate, the undisputed
right.
Trump candidate. Right now, he's the disputed Trump candidate because you have Bruce Lavelle in that race. And Judson Hill is kind of been trying to walk in the middle. This was the first of three Republican debates for the 11 candidates in the 18-candidate field. And there are two more to go. But the problem is you're not hearing from, five candidates have been left out of those debates? Maybe six. Six candidates have been left out, five have been invited in.
Well, last night, candidates Dan Moody from North Fulton and Karen Hendel from Roswell didn't come.
Right.
So they are invited but backed out. So there are some openings. Those seats are open if anybody wants to claim them. You know, my thing on this, and look, I am involved in this race. I'm working with Judson, and I will try to be careful here because of that. But, you know, earlier last week, Bob Gray had told Greg Bluestein at the AJC that he would support the health care bill unequivocally. That was the quote. That was the word. That was in Greg's story. And then Sunday at the debate, he said, well, no one got to see the bill, and so we have to see the bill before we can vote on it. That's something completely different than I support it unequivocally.
Okay. Before we take a break, let's do this now. Brian, you lost a friend this week. John Richards. And I wanted to give you a minute because I know he meant a lot to you. We knew him, all of us knew him one way or another in terms of his work in politics, Republican politics. Then he became a blogger and got a lot of attention that way. So just take a moment and tell us why John Richards meant so much to you.
I think he meant a lot to Georgia politics, and I greatly appreciate Jim for putting some kind thoughts about him in the Insider blog today. Here's what I appreciated about John Richards. He not only mentored a lot of young Republicans and gave a lot of his time to helping young people who want to get into politics and make a difference in their state, but when he got to be involved as a blogger, he became one of the leading sane voices in this state in that arena, in a space where outrage and clickbait and fake news is such the norm. He was thoughtful. He let people have their say. He didn't like name-calling and sort of the ugly side of politics. It really was for him about good policy and making the state of Georgia better. And he was a voice of civility and sanity, and he is a loss to this state. Rest in peace, John Richards.
He wasn't terribly old, was he?
He was 61.
He was 61.
Okay, I didn't know. Oh, I
don't define that as old.
No, me neither. We
don't have, we'll have services, some service details up on the blog, but okay. Right now it's Wednesday evening somewhere in Gwinnett. We're not exactly sure where.
Right, he was a very popular figure among Republicans down at the Capitol, too. That he spent a lot of his time down at the legislature, and so I know that the people who work down there with him will miss him greatly. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got another segment. We're going to talk a little more about immigration, and it's fortuitous that it comes on the same day that the Attorney General of the United States is going after so-called sanctuary cities. GPB News' Sam Whitehead is going to join us, but right now it's 2:47. We'll be back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, the rise of for-profit colleges. They're supposed to offer a better way of life, but more often, they exploit the poor, women, and minorities who need them most. We talk with sociologist Tressie McMillan Cottom, author of Lower Ed. She once worked for two for-profit colleges, but became disillusioned. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Brian Robinson, Jim Galloway, Theron Johnson, and now Sam Whitehead from our own newsroom is here. Before we, excuse me, turn to you, Sam, I do want to do one quick pickup from earlier in the show, because we talked about the anti-gay or the prohibition that some people would like to put in place in terms of gays and lesbians adopting children. It is interesting to note, Theron, that Rich Golick, a Republican, who I've never thought is a bastion of liberal republicanism, said that he's introduced a measure that he says he will work for next session to write into statute protections for gays and lesbians in the workplace. That's an interesting development there, and maybe ameliorates to some extent your fears about where Georgia's headed.
Well, that's just one person, and you know, he's to be commended for courageously stepping up and saying that. And I think that if we want to be, again, an inclusive state, we got to have more people like Rich Golick.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch how that develops, because this is a state where Republicans have never wanted to do anything to codify legally gays and lesbians as part of state law.
Well, you know that Governor Deal has, through executive order, protected state employees of LGBT. So there is a little bit of precedent there.
Okay.
Yeah, but efforts to duplicate that statutorily have always been,
they've always failed. Let's turn to Sam Whitehead. Sam, you're here, as I said right before the break. It's just lucky for us that you were up in Dalton, where you were looking at the 287G program, which Donald Trump said he wants to expand. This, of course, is the program that empowers local law enforcement to become engaged with immigration officials in helping pick up and detain undocumented residents. As we reported, Jeff Sessions, this is not as opposed to being a sanctuary city, but you know, it's similar. It's in a similar vein. You went up and talked to the sheriff up in Dalton, yeah?
Yeah, and Dalton is a really interesting place. So there are four counties in Georgia that are currently participating in 287G. Three of them are here in the metro area. There's Gwinnett, Cobb, and Hall. And Whitfield's kind of an outlier geographically. It's up in the northwest corner of the state. And Dalton as a city has undergone a really interesting demographic transition in the last few decades. So Dalton is the carpet capital of the world. And there's been this influx of Hispanic and Latino people coming in to really help bolster the carpet mills up there. So Dalton or Whitfield County has participated in 287G for almost a decade. They signed on in 2008 to this voluntary program. So you're right. I went up and talked to Sheriff Scott Chitwood about what they really get out of the program. And he knows it's controversial. He knows there are concerns that it's a program that's got a perception that it's almost like a dragnet kind of thing, that they're out searching for people. Sheriff Scott Chitwood says that's really not the idea. He said he's not out to get people who are laying low.
Let's listen to a little bit of your interview.
Again, as long as they basically stay under the radar, they're a good citizen, they work every day, they're not breaking the Georgia law of DUIs and all this, there's no reason for us to approach them. Once you break the law, now I've got my foot in the door.
So it was instructive to watch Theron responding visually as he was listening to Sheriff Chitwood. Theron?
You know, listening to that, I just had a brief feeling of how it felt to be living in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. Dealing with some of the law enforcement people. But I want to read something really quickly, and I want to shout out Dunwoody Police Chief Billy Grogan, who responded to this, and I think that the sheriff of DeKalb County also came out against this. But I quote, he said, "I wouldn't expect to see many police departments sign up, at least in Georgia. Our role as police officers is building positive relationships with the community. Immigrants, whether legal or illegal, are victimized by crime at a higher rate. We want them to cooperate with us."
Sam, how would Chitwood respond to that?
Well, I put that question to him because there is this perception issue with this program, and I think that's where you start to see a little bit of a divide. I asked him again and again and again, Sheriff Chitwood, what they really got out of the program, and he kept going back to this idea that a program like this is really designed to remove the criminal element from a community. Now, depending on what part of a community you're a part of, that might mean different things. But he was very, very clear. He put it in the terms of almost this kind of mundane extra administrative tool. If you happen to break a law and end up in jail, he would explain it's just a simple process they're allowed to, a simple additional process they're allowed to put you through.
Yeah, let me, if I can make a couple points. Number one, you have sheriff's departments cooperating on this. And I know it's the case in Cobb and Gwinnett. I'm not so sure in Hall or Whitfield, but they are not, strictly speaking, law enforcement.
Absolutely.
They keep the jail. They provide courtroom security. So they're not actually out on the street day-to-day policing.
And what's fascinating about that is that in two of those, in Cobb County and Gwinnett County, the sheriffs are adamantly, they believe
And they're elected,
deeply,
by the way.
They're elected. The police chiefs in Cobb and Gwinnett want nothing to do with 287.
Now the other thing I would point out is where in places in Georgia where the sheriff is law enforcement, is about patrolling. I've talked to the sheriff in Lowndes County. I've talked to a couple out in South Georgia, and where sheriffs actually are the law enforcement, and where these workers are an essential part of the economy. That's where 287G is not selling.
So Sam, you talk to community people, mm-hmm. as well. how did some of the people who are citizens of Whitfield County respond? You talked to Nunez?
So I kind of targeted a few different groups along with going and meeting up with members of the Hispanic community. I just kind of drove around Dalton looking for a chance to talk to some normal folks. And I ran across this place, which was a real kind of distillation of maybe what Dalton's become. It's an empanada shop. You know, you've got this ubiquitous Latin American pastry, but you could get it filled with things like pimento cheese, right? So it's this combination of maybe like the American cultures and the immigrant cultures there. I spoke to this individual, Herman Nunez, and this is what he had to say about 287G.
It's a very sad situation. That's the risk they knew they were taking. It is, at the end of the day, it's the United States, and we have to abide by the laws. It's the same thing with anybody who's here that's an American, has to abide by the laws.
And Nunez was an American citizen born and raised, but kind of he and his wife, who own this empanada shop, really do exist in both these communities that are really strong in Dalton. And he said, you know, the community does feel divided. He didn't ascribe that necessarily only to programs like 287G.
So let me with it, just we have a very short amount of time, but I do think it's one of the reasons I thought it turns out it's important to begin this discussion today, I think, Brian, is that in the aftermath of a defeat on Friday, a major defeat, I don't think, number one, it's a coincidence that today was the day that Jeff Sessions made his announcement about withholding federal funds from cities that don't comply with federal law in terms of turning over undocumented. It strikes me that the White House, especially with a Steve Bannon running a lot of what's going on there, they are going to look to Trump's core values, the things that sold him to the American people who did vote for him. And this is one of those things. The tougher he gets on immigration, the more he has an opportunity to try to recover a little bit. Yeah?
You know, it's not like everyone's like, oh, wait, what? Trump's against illegal immigration?
But he can take harsher and harsher action, yes?
This isn't necessarily harsher action. The 287G program has been in process for a long time. I think it probably came into effect during maybe the Bush years.
It was it was part of a law initially passed in 1996.
Clinton years. Well, all right, signed by that conservative Bill Clinton.
Well, but Theron, we got about a minute here. I was referring specifically to this action against so-called sanctuary cities.
Yeah, I mean, look, it has an effect on Atlanta. I mean, Mayor Reed has come out and said that he wants to be a welcoming city, has not gone as far as to comply with the sanctuary city. So absolutely. I mean, to penalize, you know, cities for wanting to be welcoming and to be inclusive. And I think you're right, Bill, that the timing of this was not coincidental. I think it was very intentional.
Gallery, you get the last word.
Okay, good. Just a new report out on the AJC.com. Governor Deal says his administration is exploring major changes to Georgia's healthcare system, including seeking a waiver program for Medicaid expansion.
I said this on Friday that this was an opening, and boy, every now and then I actually say something that may be kind of right. Will, that's a fascinating.
Fantastic.
It's about time.
That is a huge story.
And this is where Tom Price, being the guy who makes the decision, is going to be so crucial. We now have the opportunity, and this is something I've been saying for the last year, to put together a very conservative, market-driven plan for our Medicaid program.
One of the things that's important that we got to get out of here is that had this law passed, had this bill passed in the House, it was going to shut off the ability of states to expand Medicaid using the federal program. Now that the bill has failed, it opens the door. So we'll watch that very closely. We're out of time for today's show. Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, you know we love having you here. Jim Galloway, always great to have you.
Thank you.
And Sam Whitehead, thank you for coming in as well.
Good job,
come back
Sam.
And see
yeah,
us
thanks, Bill.
When you've got a big story for us. I'm Bill Nigut. We'll be back with you at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. Lori Geary is going to be here on Wednesday. So is Patricia Murphy and Kerwin Swint from up at Kennesaw State and Greg Bluestein. We'll see you at 2 o'clock on Wednesday.